Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 161, recorded Saturday, March 21st, 2020. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this shelter-in-place edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: new crisis, old question, and driving down to Key West. Coming to you today, hunkered down in the Travel Commons studios in Chicago, Illinois, trying to figure out exactly what Illinois' governor means with his shelter-in-place directive. Not a lot of travel since the last episode, and that's not just because of coronavirus. No business travel booked, so it was just one trip in the back half of February to visit some friends who are snowbirding in Key West, Florida. 80 degrees and sunny versus 30 degrees and gray skies in Chicago. Yeah, that was tough duty. Our friends rented a nice house up a dead-end street in the historic district in Key West, just a couple of blocks off of Duval Street. They had it for 2 months, February through the end of this month, but actually they left early, giving up their last 2 weeks of sunny weather to drive back to Chicago because they're afraid hotels will be closed along the route home. I hadn't really had any travel planned in March, but pretty quickly was watching our April travel plans dissolve as COVID-19 spread. First, a friend from Poland canceled his wedding in Sedona, Arizona, shortly after the U.S. announced the 30-day travel ban for Europeans. Now, while their wedding date was past the 30-day or past the expiration of those 30 days, they figured that, you know, this 30-day thing was just the start, which it was. I mean, over the next 5 days, travel bans started popping up across Europe. Irene and I joked to ourselves, well, lucky timing. First time in 4 years, we're not doing spring break in Europe and opting instead for some wine tasting in Howell Mountain and Napa Valley. We were joking to ourselves about that until the next day when California locked everything down, closing everything, including restaurants and wineries. For some families, kids home from school and mom or dad off the road and working from home, that forced family togetherness is adding stress. I was talking to a friend this week. He said, you know, I'm usually on the road 75% of the time, and the kids are in school or sports. After 2 days of this, my wife laid down the rules. My son is in the basement. My wife and daughter are on the second floor. I'm on the third floor. The first floor with the kitchen is neutral territory. You can pass through. You can get something out of the fridge, but you can't claim table or counter space there. Last time I had checked in with him, everyone was still alive. That is, they hadn't killed each other yet. But I'm nothing if I'm not an optimist. So in the midst of this week's unraveling, I found a deal. I found a deal on a direct American Air flight from O'Hare to Barcelona, 8.5 hours on a new 787. So I booked it. 2 weeks in Barcelona at the end of September. Now, I don't know what we'll do there yet or where we'll stay or what shape Barcelona is going to be in. But I got to tell you, I'm already looking forward to it. Following up, Steve Frick, a longtime Travel Commons listener and Untapped buddy, who also does a podcast, Travel Stories from Back and Gone Again, took some time to record and send in an audio comment about last month's episode.
Hey Mark, I hope all is well. Steve Frick here with a few comments regarding episode 160.
First, with regards to the dope box, pot box, amnesty box, or whatever the FAA decides to call that, I actually had a quick layover in Chicago right after you posted that and was on the verge of going on the other side of the TSA gates just to get a selfie with the box. But then I remembered I was in Midway and thought better of it. When it comes to rideshare, I am almost in 100% agreement with you. They are not what they used to be. It's very rare that I take a rideshare at the airport anymore, and for a couple reasons. First is most of them now are off-lot. Like you said, I had to go to LaGuardia, and I couldn't get anybody to pick me up at LaGuardia to take me into New Jersey. ended up with about $170 cab ride. The only time I'm really using the rideshare apps now is if I'm at the hotel and I want to go out and get a bite to eat, or if my wife and I are out someplace and just don't feel like parking and hassling with it. But yeah, the luster for me has definitely gone away when it comes to the airport.
Another great episode. Keep up the great work and safe travels.
Steve, you gotta love that text-to-speech robot voice. It's kind of catchy, isn't it? I would have loved to seen that selfie of the you and the weed box on your Twitter feed. Also, check out the show notes for a link to Steve's podcast. Darren Mack hit me up on Twitter. Darren wrote, "Hey, Mark, just listened to Travel Commons episode 155 on my last flight. I board my next one, which is a Delta MD-88. Look out the window and see this. Thanks for putting that in my head, buddy." Now, from the how that all translates is, from the picture on Darren's tweet, you can see he's sitting in the window seat of an MD-88 just in front of the engine cowl. Remember those MD-80s, MD-80, DC-9 family, the two jet engines are mounted against the side of the plane. So if you're sitting in the back of that plane, you look out, you see that engine. And that was the picture that Darren had in his tweet. And his reference to episode 155, if you remember, we talked about American Airlines retirement of their MD-80s. And I mentioned during that episode that when I ended up in a seat like Darren's, my mind would sometimes wander. If the engine next to my head blows up, will the shrapnel blow out into kind of space, or will it blow into the cabin and then take my head off? I've never heard of such a catastrophic failure in an MD-80, but, you know, that didn't keep me from wondering. And now Darren can't keep from wondering. So, Darren, I'm sorry about that. You won't be able to unthink that. I'm guessing, though, that those MDs were the first planes that Delta parked as air traffic cratered and will be the last to return if they do at all. So I guess, I don't know, savor that picture. And for the UK Travel Commons subscribers, a shout out to another Travel Commons listener and another untapped friend, Rob Cheshire, who launched This Week in Craft.beer, a weekly newsletter covering the UK craft beer scene. Rob's 4 issues in, and it looks like he's on a good roll. We're thinking about heading over to the UK for Thanksgiving, and the taproom directory in Rob's newsletter will be a key to planning that trip. I also love that he's using a .beer domain name, so it's thisweekincraft.beer. Check out the show notes for a link if you can't figure it out yourself. I think I mentioned in past episodes that I've switched my carry-on, not my regular carry-on bag, but kind of my briefcase sort of bag, from a Timbuktu backpack to a Timbuktu messenger bag. Digitizing means carrying less physical stuff. The backpack was feeling half empty, so I switched to a smaller messenger bag. I like it, except for one thing. It'll only hold a short water bottle. The 20-ouncer my daughter gave me for Christmas, it fits great in that backpack side pocket, but it's way too tall for the messenger bag. Now, I played around with a lot of water bottles, but quite honestly, the best one has turned out to be a 500 milliliter Evian bottle, kind of just the ones that you see all the time in the airport shops. Now, I know that single-use plastic is a bad thing, but, you know, I can get at least a week's worth of use out of one of these Evian bottles until I fill it up in the gym or the concierge lounge the morning before my flight home and then forget about it until the TSA person pulls it out of the bag on the other side of security and asks me, a bit sarcastically, if I want to go back and check it in my luggage. Yeah, no, just pitch it. Which is why I can't have nice things, like a $35 Teakwood Swell bottle. Instead, I end up walking down the terminal and just spending another $350 for another bottle of Evian. Now, for my trip to Key West, I got back to an old habit of mine of reading, you know, non-guidebooks, either fiction or nonfiction, about my destination before going on. So for Key West before driving down the overseas highway, I read Last Train to Paradise about what was really an incredible effort that went into building a railroad line from, from the mainland, from Florida, out to Key West over 100 years ago. The engineering that they described was very, very cool. And actually, a lot of that rail bed ended up getting repurposed for the first iteration of the overseas highway. And of course, then I had to read some Hemingway. So I read Hemingway's To Have and To Have Not because, well, it's Hemingway and it's about Key West. And like I said, you just have to do that. I used to do more of this. I started this when I read Paul Thoreau's Kingdom by the Sea before my first trip to the UK back in 1985. I ended up reading John Lukács' History Budapest 1900 before I went to Hungary in 1989, Watermark by Joseph Brodsky before a trip to Venice, and His Bloody Project by Graham Burnett before going to Scotland's Western Highlands. As you'd guess, none of these were about what to do or what to see, but instead they gave some sort of context about the place. Even the fiction books gives a bit of balance to the go here, see that stuff in guidebooks and websites. Now, something new for this trip to Key West, a Spotify playlist of Jimmy Buffett tunes from those 1970s Key West albums, Living and Dying in Three Quarters Time and Havana Daydreaming. It gave a little bit of additional context for that 3-hour drive down through the Keys. And hey, if you have any travel stories, questions, comments, tips, rants, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can send a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or the Instagram account at Travel Commons, or you can always post your comments on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is New Crisis, Old Question. Now, I'm not going to try to do any hot takes on what this whole coronavirus, COVID-19, social distancing experience means because, A, I hate the whole sort of insta-punditry that social media has spawned, and B, there are just so many unknowns and things are changing so fast that any attempt at meaningful analysis is just not going to age well right now. Indeed, I've had to rewrite this episode 3 times now. I got to get it recorded before things change and I have to redo it all over again. Now, at first, this whole situation kind of felt like the Black Monday crash of 1987, which I hate to admit, I'm old enough to have experienced, or September 11th, 2001. I thought, either one of those felt initially like good comparison points, significant, sharp, scary events that came out of nowhere with no warning. And then when we were in it, felt like a free fall with no bottom in sight. But after a week or so, even though the stock market was still down or airports and airplanes were still empty, we could see a path to the other side. Maybe not turn-by-turn directions, but at least it felt like we could point ourselves in the general direction. But with this, we're 2-3 weeks in, and it still feels like we're in that free fall. We don't know where the bottom is, let alone the direction to get out. I remember, after September 11th and then also after the 2008 Great Recession, people were saying everything has changed and wondering if travel would rebound, if people would get on planes again in the same numbers. And it did rebound and then some, though actually that growth, if you look at the numbers, that growth has been driven more by leisure travelers than road warriors. But the travel industry makes its money off the frequent business traveler, and that question pops up again. Will they come back? Because it is actually a bit different this time. In 2001, remote work options were pretty much just AOL or Yahoo instant messaging. Video was limited to special rooms with ISDN lines. There, I'm showing my age again. Skype didn't launch for another 2 years. Now, in 2008, things were a bit better. But, we were only a few months after the second version of the iPhone was released, the iPhone 3G, for those of you keeping score. WhatsApp doesn't launch for another year, and Slack doesn't show up for another 5. But now, 12 years on, we have bandwidth, we have tools. Last fall, we had Flygskam, flight shaming in Swedish, I guess, that hit the mainstream. And now the COVID-19 pandemic that's just about shut down international air travel. Were we getting ready to make a major step back from business travel? And the coronavirus is just kind of a forcing function. Now, I'm coming up on the 35th anniversary of my first business flight. And in that time, I've known maybe a handful of guys, and they were all men, who went out of their way to do more business travel than needed. When offered the choice between a conference call or a plane trip, they chose the plane trip. The vast majority of the folks that I knew got on that plane or the train or behind the wheel because that's what they needed to do to get the job done, to close a deal, to do a project, to work with an employee. Now, as remote tools get better and get more ingrained in our culture, the ability to get more tasks done remotely increases. But we are social animals, and for all the data and processes, most business is about relationships. And as long as that's true, we'll want to meet people face-to-face over a coffee, a beer, a meal. That is, once we finally touch bottom after this coronavirus freefall and can feel safe sitting next to each other again. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is driving down to Key West. So back to the pre-lockdown days of February, it was the first time I'd been to Key West, and we had decided to drive down, run the whole overseas highway, that 113-mile stretch of US 1 from Homestead, which is south of Miami, down to Key West. Now, we flew into Fort Lauderdale Airport because, well, I got to tell you, it's a little bit less of a zoo parade than Miami is. We landed, were able to walk straight out of the terminal, across the street, and into the rental car center. No shuttle bus, you know, taking us 10, 15, 20 minutes to the back 40. Actually, Fort Myers Airport is the same way on the Gulf side. You got to love that. There are damn few on-property rental sites left, so I appreciate them when I get them. Walking down the Hertz five-star aisle with Irene, I fell out of top-tier President's Circle a few years back. Too many in-city clients where Uber and Lyft were more convenient. So walking down the aisle, I see a bunch of Hyundai Konas, which was a new model for me. I guess it's some sort of subcompact SUV. There were a few Chevy Malibus, so full-size sedans, and then, as always, the requisite bunch of Nissan Altimas. Now, I'm doing my normal drill, looking for the non-beat-up cars so that I don't have to argue about damage when I return it. And I'm also looking for low mileage so the car won't break down during the rental. Irene, she's looking for a cute color. Luckily for us, the car that was at kind of the intersection, if you draw that Venn diagram, you know, the center of all those circles, was sitting right in front of us, a surf blue Hyundai Kona with 126 miles on the odometer. So we threw our luggage in, dialed up Key West on Google Maps, put it on the dashboard using CarPlay, and then pulled out of the parking space right into a 15-minute line to get out of the Hertz lot. Somehow that partnership that Hertz has with Clear doesn't seem to be making much of a dent. When we were planning this trip, everyone warned us off the drive. It's slow, you'll get caught behind a bunch of trucks, an accident will shut the whole road down. But I was as excited for the drive as I was for the time in Key West. I think the overseas highway is one of the iconic drives in the U.S. In my mind, it's kind of in that same league with Pacific Coast Highway between San Francisco and L.A. and Route 66 from Chicago to L.A. It's just their classic American drives. Now, even before we left the mainland, the drive was kind of cool with the Everglades on one side and the marinas and ocean inlets on the other. The drive through Key Largo, I don't know, a bit less interesting, not much more than sort of bait shops and boat parking. A bit further along, we crawled the traffic. We just crawled through Isla Mirada and Marathon, heavy traffic even on a Monday afternoon. Now, everybody talks about the 7-mile bridge. We clocked it in at 6.8 miles, but I got the Roundup. And, you know, we've seen it in movies. There was that, I forget the name, True Lies was that one movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis. That was at least one movie that I remember it from. And driving along that bridge is very cool. But what was more interesting to me were the sections of the highway before that that would run along the low-lying keys, actually along the route of the old Overseas Railroad, which I had read about in Last Train to Paradise. Time and again, we'd be driving across what was, I don't know, nothing more than a bit of roadbed, maybe 100 or so feet on of beach and vegetation on each side. And after that, just ocean. Now, the warnings that we got from folks, they were right. The highway is not a fast drive. It squeezes down from four lanes to two lanes for a bit, you know, and the Monroe County Sheriff has patrol cars parked where the speed limit dips when you pass through towns. But speed isn't really the point in this drive. Just like you don't run through Big Sur at 70 miles an hour on PCH, you don't blow past, you know, people surf fishing for snapper, snook, or grouper, and you don't not slow down and try and spot key deer on Big Pine Key. I mean, if you want to just get down to Key West as fast as possible, spend another $100 and take the flight from Lauderdale or Miami direct into Key West. You know, otherwise, throttle back. And remember, on this drive, it's as much about the journey as it is the destination. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 161. I hope you all enjoyed the show. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for music links, as well as links to Steve Frick's podcast and Rob Cheshire's newsletter. You can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Alexa, iTunes, and Spotify. The links, along with the RSS feeds, are on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website under the heading Subscribe. I guess you could always, you know, go and in those apps, search also for Travel Commons. You could, inside of Spotify or SoundCloud or Stitcher, you can just search, and or you could ask Alexa, hey, Alexa, play Travel Commons podcast. Anyhow, or you could just go to the website and find all the links under subscribe. Right below that in the social media section are the links to Travel Commons Facebook page, Twitter, and the Instagram feeds. If you're already subscribed, how about leaving us a review on one of those sites? Really would appreciate that. And always, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text your audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, and Peacock on Twitter. Write them on the Travel Commons page on Facebook, the Travel Commons Instagram site. Post them on the website at travelcommons.com. I really would actually appreciate hearing about your thoughts, experiences in this time of sort of lockdown, shelter in place, social distancing. I'd be interested in that. Would love to be able to include those in the next podcast. And of course, thanks to everyone like Steve and Darren who have already taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. I really do appreciate it. And until next time, stay safe. Remember what you learned in kindergarten. You know, cover your mouth when you cough, wash your hands. And as always, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.